Hey fam, I'm Jada Pinkett Smith, and this is the Red Table Talk podcast. All your favorite episodes from the Facebook Watch show in audio, produced by Westbrook Audio and iHeartRadio. Please don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. On this Red Table Talk, she was adopted by white parents in an all-white town.
I don't identify with black folks, and I'm not comfortable even sitting at this table with you.
Now she says she feels lost, caught between two races.
I have no sense of strong identity without knowing my culture. How am I supposed to raise a black child if I don't know black culture?
But if you're trying to counsel other people on how to do it, counsel yourself.
And then an emotional reunion with her birth mother.
It's an overwhelming moment sitting in between parents.
Yeah.
Willow. How do you think you would feel if you had been adopted by a white family?
I literally have zero idea.
Really?
What about you, Gam?
How I was raised, I've always been a very strong proponent for black children being raised in black families.
Well, I know how difficult it was trying to go to all white private schools.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that being raised by a white family would be challenging.
I mean, I guess living in Calabasas, there's...
Yeah, but you come
when
home
we were growing,
and you got black people.
And we have so many... Yeah, exactly. But
right.
when you go
you
out in the world...
You know who you are. Don't try it.
But being young mm-hmm. and going out and basically only seeing white people, that's... my experience.
And your mother made sure that you went to school with black children.
Exactly.
Even if she had to create the school her dad wants off.
Which I did.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go. Let's go talk to Miss Angela and hear her story. So this is going to be a fascinating conversation. Angela Tucker, a black woman who was adopted by a white family, is at the table today.
Angela's birth mother, Deborah, was homeless and in poor health, barely able to take care of herself, let alone her newborn baby, who was just diagnosed with a form of cerebral palsy. Even though it tore her apart, Deborah made the agonizing decision to give Angela up. She was adopted by a white couple, eager to give her a good life and to take care of her medical needs. They moved Angela into their home in their all-white town. Angela says she loves her family, but that she grew up disconnected from black culture and that has left her feeling more white than black. Now Angela is using what she has learned in her personal struggle to help families navigate the challenges of transracial adoptions.
I was embarrassed, you know. I didn't look like my parents. I look different. My eyes are different. My skin tone is different. People knew I was different.
You were adopted, you were 13 months?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
You were 13
just
months.
Over a year old.
And what was it like growing up in this all-white town and having white parents?
I have no sense of strong identity. Being a transracial adoptee is really difficult to share what we really feel because we have parents who raised us and love us and we don't want to appear that we're not grateful for what they've done.
Right.
For me to talk about transracial adoption, honestly, is to hurt somebody. I understand that keeping me alive and prioritizing my medical needs was really important. And look, I'm alive today.
Right.
I'm alive, but dead inside in some ways without knowing my culture and not being connected.
Right.
So for me, I don't feel like transracial adoption is the right solution, because essentially we're asking me as a black woman to assimilate into white culture, but to also keep my blackness somehow, even though I wasn't raised within it.
Yeah. Right.
People often don't admit this, but a lot of black transracial adoptees look in the mirror and are surprised when we look in the mirror and see a black person,
mm-hmm.
because we're so used to seeing white people and we see our parents and they're white and we love them.
Right.
And so then when we see ourselves, like, oh yeah, I forgot, I'm black.
Right.
And so
yeah.
As a black woman, where do you feel most comfortable?
Where I fit in, where I feel like I actually belong is with other transracial adoptees. So I feel like white people are comfortable around me. I'm comfortable with white people. It's not that I don't want to identify as a black woman.
Right.
But not growing up with black culture and feeling fear when I met my birth mother and my whole birth family, I was a little bit afraid to meet them because they're a black family and I haven't been around that. And so
exactly.
I can't consider myself.
It was like alien to you, like completely unknown.
It was.
Yeah.
And therefore kind of scary. But then at the same time, I was like, this is my family.
Right.
And why am I afraid of my own family?
Right.
Yeah. But I don't identify with Black folks because I feel my own sense of fear or like illegitimacy is how I feel even sitting at this table with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like you three are legitimate Black people.
Mm-hmm.
Because you were raised by Black people.
Right.
Yeah. It like, it's embarrassing to say that, but that's how
that's your
I
reality.
Feel.
Yeah.
The thing that's troubling me just a little bit, and I want you to clarify it if you can, is your use of the term fear, the fear of Black people. Yeah. Where is that coming from, that you choose that term, fear?
I think about all of our implicit biases that we hold, and I can feel in my body how I change, how I'm not as comfortable.
Yeah.
When I'm with all Black folks, I don't fit in.
Right. What are you doing now to try to assimilate into the Black community?
Oh.
Or do you even feel the need to do that?
Or do I feel like I have the right to do that? And I don't think I don't think I feel the right. I haven't thought about it just like that.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I have embraced my place in the white world, you know? Like, I've chosen to live in a predominantly white neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just trying to be okay with that right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to be like, you know, I grew up in white spaces, so it makes sense that I might feel safe here.
I would imagine, I mean, even for coming from Baltimore, Maryland, and then coming out to Los Angeles. It's just like, the streets of Baltimore were familiar to me, and then rolling in the streets of Calabasas was
a
just like...
different, right.
It takes a minute, you know, and people like, you know, you're stepping up. It's like, yeah, I'm stepping up, but this is like,
this is right.
This is not my thing, you know?
And people like, think that's very similar to adoption, where it's like, oh, you've gotten a better life.
Right. Yeah.
Like looking at my birth mother, and she doesn't have a lot of materialistic stuff, but I still long to be close to her, with her. And that's one thing that adoptees don't feel safe to say.
Right.
I wish I had that.
Right.
Because the rest of the world's like, wait, what? You have great parents who are able to afford all these extracurriculars for you and all this, and you probably wouldn't have had that there.
Right. Mm-hmm. When I listen to you, it sounds like there's a lot of internal conflict all over the place.
Yeah, I struggle because I'm certainly grateful for the life I've been afforded and all the opportunities that I've had. But at the same time, it's hard to walk around every day and have people see a Black woman, but for me not to even feel like a Black woman. And that conflict that happens every single day is a huge weight. But what I also know is that I was given what I feel like was white privilege by osmosis. A lot of people like myself, once we leave the house and we no longer have white privilege by osmosis, it's like an awakening.
Yeah.
So I chose to go to a predominantly white college because that's what just made sense for me.
Right.
So I was comfortable.
How were you accepted in that environment? And did you feel racism then?
When I went to college, I did feel a lot of racism, but it was coded in this way that where I was put up on a pedestal. So it's tokenism, being in an all-white school, you know, always being chosen to be on, like, the college pamphlets and things like that.
Oh,
I was like, oh, how kind, you think I'm wonderful. But really, like, they need that token. And I don't know if they embrace me, they're fetishizing me, and I'm, like, interesting to everybody. Like, everyone is like, wow, you know, your lips are so big, your smile's so huge. People reach out and can't resist touching my hair. Yes.
Oh, my God.
I didn't think of it as racism at the time. I just thought it was maybe flattering. And then I started to realize what was happening.
Token racism is like, that's something we don't talk about a lot and we experience a lot in our industry.
Not having other people to bounce these stories off of is what was really tough.
Yeah.
So that's when I really started thinking about my Blackness.
You are now helping transracial adoptions by talking to families that adopt Black children.
And how do you do that? Is it a coaching? Is it mentoring?
It's a lot of education, and it's a lot of talking about feelings, sadly. Adoptive parents have really, like, they've commandeered the whole conversation. And so Unfortunately, we rarely hear from adopted people themselves because we often think about adoption as babies, and I'm an adult,
right.
You know, but reality is that we grow up.
Yeah.
And we are still adopted. Rarely do we hear from birth parents. Instead, they're just kind of this amorphous, villainized people that are like, they're always
in the shadows, forgotten about.
They're scary. You know, so a lot of my work is helping adoptive families to humanize their children's birth parents. Yeah. I'm hoping that I live to see the day to where people say, when I say I'm adopted, they say, oh my gosh, did someone try to keep you with your family first?
Yeah. Right.
Instead of what we hear is, your parents must be so great.
Yeah. I never thought about it from that perspective.
Me either, honestly.
My birth mom, she gave birth to me and then she walked out the door and was homeless again.
Mm. Right.
She said, everybody cares about you, getting you somewhere, but nobody cared about me.
Yeah. Mm.
And I'm like,
Wow.
What's up with
and
that?
And we still see that, like that discarding for the life of the woman who is having this child.
I need to just say though, this discomfort that you have with your own blackness, but yet you're counseling others on how to incorporate brown children into their families.
I feel in a bind because I've grown up in whiteness and I have fostered, and my husband and I want to foster again, and it makes sense to me to foster a white child because that's what I'm familiar with.
Wow.
But then I'm like, well,
that is quite a conflict.
It's kind of a conundrum.
It's a real freaking conundrum.
Now that is ripe for psychological archaeology.
Yes.
But if you're trying to counsel other people on how to do it, counsel yourself.
What are you saying? How would I do that? Like, counsel yourself in how to raise
a black child.
Yes.
How am I supposed to raise a black child if I don't know black culture?
What you're telling other people to do is to move into a black community, expose the child to black culture. You can do the same thing.
What a tall order.
It's a tall order, but it's a tall order for a white person to do it for a black person. So as a black person to do it for a black child, it certainly is, to me, would be a bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have some idea of what it's like being black in the world.
I do, yes.
You
and
absolutely
it
do.
It could be a real healing process.
For yourself.
For you.
Yeah.
Right, but if that's not my goal, you know. But yeah.
Wow.
Just saying.
I've learned how to flourish in a white world. And I...
Well, so you have no desire.
But Angela, we as black people, we can't keep asking white people to do things for us that we're not willing to do for ourselves.
Right.
White people are in their comfort zones, too. That's what we
that's
do
why,
all
that's
day
how we got
long
here.
In
that's
regards
right.
to white privilege and all of that is trying to pull white people out of their comfort zone to go, hey, just step in
to our world.
In our world a little bit and understand our experience.
Yes.
You feel me?
Yeah.
Sometimes our biggest treasures and our biggest lessons are in the zones of discomfort.
Right. So true.
You're putting up an excuse, a reason why you can't do it.
Yeah.
So we want to remove that. And we want you to just sit with that for a minute.
I will.
Just sit with the idea for a minute.
I will.
Yeah. Well, Angela's adoptive parents, Teresa and David, have agreed to join us at the table for their first interview together. So first of all, I'd just like to say you guys have raised a phenomenal young woman right here. She's quite dynamic. As she was growing up, did you guys realize any struggles that she was having or?
You know, first was the hair.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know how to do that. Her friends were always touching her hair.
Right.
I just thought of curiosity.
Right.
They've
right.
never seen hair like this.
Right.
Okay. Right. Like the transracial adoptee has to become a teaching tool.
Yes. Right, right.
Like, learn on me.
Exactly. Yeah.
But think of that. That could be a positive experience, broadening other people's horizons and understanding.
Yeah.
In a white, predominantly white town, nonetheless.
It can be a step towards raising awareness.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
It can be a step towards raising awareness, but it also can be burdensome on the child.
Yeah,
sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
growing up, my sister, I loved how her hair was sleek and down and would like flow in the wind. Yes. I loved her blue eyes. I liked my dad's blue eyes. I just, it comes back to representation. Like, I don't see.
If
I don't see that, I see this, and it's it's beautiful, and I love them. I want to be like that.
Yeah. I remember I went through a little phase when I was younger where I hated my hair. And I would cry. And I would just be like, I want my hair to, just like you were saying, I want my hair to fall. I want it to flow. Why? And then I remember you showed me Rough and Stuff. And I watched that video and I was like, Rough and Stuff. And I was like, That's when my whole life changed with my hair.
Lady of Rage.
You were like, here, none of this. I'm going to show you
this. Therein lies, again, my concern and the challenge of not being raised, you know, around your own, not even around you, even if you're not in, you know, but not even around, nowhere around your own culture.
Right.
It becomes problematic with your own self-esteem,
Absolutely.
Your own self-worth.
Absolutely.
What made you decide to adopt children of color?
I'm not sure that was a conscious decision.
Wow, okay.
We ask ourselves, ask each other,
right.
What are we open to? What can we handle and contribute to? And we found Angela in a book, The State of Tennessee. And what we saw was a child who also had spastic quadriplegia, hearing loss, and that we could help. She could be part of our family.
Right.
So you didn't really even consider the fact that she was Black. It wasn't something that you even really thought about.
You just
saw a child in need.
Yeah, obviously her picture was...
Right. But you didn't consider that there might be any challenges or any differences in how she would be raised based on her race.
If we did at that time, they would have been secondary to what are the needs.
Got it. Well, Angela's birth mother, Deborah, is joining us as well. Angela has not seen her in nearly 4 years.
Wow. So
this is pretty awesome.
Oh, okay. Wow. There she is.
Well, hello, Miss Deborah.
Oh, welcome to the table, Miss Deborah.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Willow.
Thank you for coming.
Willow.
Thank you so much.
This is my family. This is
my family.
This is my family.
Yes.
Angela, how are you, darling? How are you?
Miss Deborah, you can sit over there
sit
right
beside
by
Angela.
Angela.
Thank you.
Yes. So 8 years ago, Angela began the emotional journey to find her birth mother, Deborah, and she documented the whole process.
I've been waiting,
God, she is so pretty, and like, she's so tall, and oh, it was a nervous wreck. I think I would have been a different person if I would have grown up with a sister.
Waited like for 25 years to thank Deborah, thank her for sharing Angela. So I right away, of course, I wanted to thank her. And so we started walking together and I was thanking her, but at the same time, she was thanking me. And I'd never thought about that. She did just a really hard thing. She did something that I'm not sure I could do. And I did something that she wasn't able to do.
Wow. It's beautiful.
How are you feeling, Deborah?
Hurt.
Yeah.
I will forever hurt. Mm. The more I see her, the harder it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I could go back and undo my life, I would. No way that I would give away a child. Right? At that time, not having a home, not having a job. Why have to drag a child around?
Right.
Because you can't take care of it.
Yeah.
So you've got to make a strong choice.
Yeah.
Right.
So I went to a higher power, and I said, help me, please.
Hmm.
When I put Angela up for adoption, that ended all my rights to know anything.
Right.
I had no idea about where Angela was. I had no idea about transracial adoption. I was brought up into that age where you didn't talk to white people, let me talk to you.
Yes, right.
I was astonished.
So, Teresa, were you hesitant about Angela finding Deborah?
When I was younger, yes.
Yeah.
Because I had this unreasonable fear that she might kind of come and she'd be her mom.
Right.
But I couldn't. Yeah. I don't know why I couldn't picture.
That you would be replaced.
I would be replaced, yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Deborah taught me that.
She's her mother.
Right.
Different.
I'm the vessel that God used to put her here.
Yeah.
But there's her parents right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I am just so proud of the young lady she is, what they've taught her, how smart she is.
It's an overwhelming moment sitting in between parents.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, everyone's so beautiful here, but my eyes just want to, like, stare at Deborah and just, because I'm still just trying to figure her out.
Right.
And I still can't believe it.
I can't figure me out.
We all know that you've done the best that you can. And that we truly want you to feel like you're part of our family, that you not being able to parent me doesn't mean that you give up your rights to know who I am, know how I'm doing.
Thank you. I just need to thank everyone at this table for allowing me to be here.
Oh,
absolutely.
Well, I think it's just beautiful that we could all sit here together for many different reasons.
And talk about this specifically.
This specific. Right. And the fact that these beautiful people adopted and raised this beautiful woman.
And were open enough to come and speak to us about it.
Yeah, like, and crossing those racial barriers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And even though this is a learning process.
Yeah.
But love is love.
Right.
Love is love. And this just shows you right here.
This has been one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah.
Hey, RTT family. Join our Red Table Talk group on Facebook to become part of the conversation. And be sure to follow the show page to catch up on all our episodes.
Yeah. This is our new family. Family portrait. Yeah.
Thank you.
I can't believe it.
There's so much going on behind the scenes.
It's a journey.
Are you ready to go?
Yeah, I'm broken. With this broken ankle.
Give me some love.
It's a journey.
To join the Red Table Talk family and become a part of the conversation, follow us at facebook.com/redtabletalk. Thanks for listening to this episode of Red Table Talk Podcast, produced by Facebook Watch, Westbrook Audio, and iHeartRadio.